You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Dodgers handled the Rays 8-3. Mookie Betts with a nice night, and Clayton Kershaw as well. Game 2 coming up tonight. Tua Tagovailoa named the Dolphins starter. That happened in the final 15 minutes of the show. And we'll dive into those topics coming up. Bruce Arians, the Tampa Bay head coach, will join us coming up in a little bit. We'll check in with the Cowboys. We've got some drama. We'll check in with the Dolphins as well. And we'll recap what happened game one of the World Series and look ahead to game two. Sometimes it's good to remember narratives and legacy are not written in ink. Sometimes they're written in pencil. And over the years, we know Clayton Kershaw has struggled in the postseason. But he's gradually improving. Last night, he appeared to put his World Series struggles behind him, at least for the moment, as he gave the Dodgers six strong innings, 8-3 win over the Rays. And it's good to see Kershaw be the Kershaw of the regular season. He did give up a solo home run in the fifth. I thought if you got five innings out of him, five solid innings, just giving that confidence to send him into that next start that he's going to have. He struck out eight. He fooled the Tampa batters all night long. It helped that the Dodgers gave him some offensive support so he could be a little bit more aggressive. You know, it wasn't one of those one-run games where you get a little too cute there and then you get burned. But last night we saw Clayton Kershaw, not a watered-down version. And depending on how long this series goes, we'll see Kershaw again. And he can continue to rewrite his postseason legacy or at least give us a couple of new chapters there, which was good to see. Here is the manager, Dave Roberts, on Kershaw being pulled in the sixth inning.
I mean, you just figure he's going to be on regular for his next start. So you got an 8-1 lead, and, you know, with nine outs to go, we got to be able to protect it.
Here is Clayton Kershaw talking about last night's victory.
It's great to get this series going with a win. You know, that's the biggest thing, you know, for us is to get going, get that first game. It's always important to get that first game of a series. And just for me personally, it's awesome, you know, to get to pitch well and get a win in a World Series. Like you said, I'm just thankful for another opportunity.
Yeah, and that went perfect for the Dodgers. You got their big-time players starting out well. Kershaw pitched well. You didn't want to burn the bullpen. And, you know, this is a Tampa roster that is probably the deepest pitching staff. I thought the reason why I picked Tampa to go to the World Series is because how deep their pitching staff was. The reason why I had the Dodgers going to the World Series and winning is because of their offense. Any kind of good pitching that the Dodgers can give you, consistent pitching, to go along with that hitting, although the bats haven't been great. The last series, Corey Seager was the big bat. I love that people are seeing Mookie Betts. I told you a couple of years ago, he was one of the few players that I would pay to see when he was in Boston. And he had a breakout game. He's had a couple of great moments. He's a wonderful outfielder. And he had the audacity to steal a base last night, McLovin. What do the analytics think about that?
Giving away runs.
Yeah. He stole a base last night.
Oh, and that made the difference in an 8-3 game?
Well, John Smoltz did say, sometimes you shake up the pitcher when you start to steal bases. I don't know. That's John Smoltz, who is a Hall of Famer, McLovin.
Yeah, but I don't see John Smoltz running any teams into the World Series. I see him announcing. He's a great announcer, but I don't see him GMing anybody anywhere.
I think John Smoltz has more postseason stolen bases than any pitcher in history. He's got three. So he is a little bit of an expert there. But, there are children watching the game last night that they probably said to their parents, what was that? Well, that's called a stolen base, Jimmy.
Well, you're right, because the game started at 8, and what time did it end? Was it 3:45 in the morning? I can't even remember. Or is it still going on now?
Well, that's because everybody's up there, you know, they want to swing and hit home runs, or they strike out.
Oh, so a guy, you have a Ricky Henderson on first base, there's 9 throws over there. That's not exactly speeding up the game.
Well, why throw over there if nobody's stealing?
That's what I'm saying. If you go back to stolen bases, it's going to get even longer games because they're going to throw over to first. That's the most boring play in sports.
This award-nominated program brought to you by Breeders' Cup. November 6th and 7th, the world's best thoroughbreds compete in 14 exhilarating races at the Breeders' Cup World Championships. Learn more at breederscup.com/2020. Catch all the action live on NBC Sports. McLovin, do you have a poll question today?
I have some options.
All right.
Okay. If Clayton Kershaw loses his next game, will we all go back to talking about his postseason failures?
Well, how is he going to lose?
Say he really falls apart. Knowing how we are as like media in a country, will we just go right back to it, or are we done talking
Probably.
About it?
No, I think it'll still be there. I think it's usually, it feels like it's always one start away from coming back with Clayton Kershaw. It's not fair, maybe, but it's the reality. And the reason is, if you juxtapose the postseason to the regular season, he's 100 games over 500 in the regular season. He's one of the great, all-time great pitchers. But it's just, you get to the postseason and he's had these innings. He's had one or two innings, and that decides how, you know, his fate. That he can be really good, and then it's one inning that trips him up. And he gave up the home run last night, and I just said, get through five, and then that's it. Because I don't care how good you are. You can lose your confidence. And then you get into the sixth inning, and I'm like, okay, if he gets through this, now I know that he's not going to be pitching anymore. Now you get the confidence, and you're answering a different type of question after the game, which is really important, certainly for Kershaw. Because if you go, what happened? You bombed, you got blown up. They roughed you up. Well, what happened? Now you get somebody who's saying, wow, they were swinging and missing. Like, what were you doing differently? Now you're asking him something where he can be proud of what his answer is going to be, not trying to explain something that might not be explainable. Yeah, McLovin.
When Paulie sent out a text last night to the group saying, would you have pulled him after the fifth inning? And Todd, with a great answer, said, well, if he lets up a couple walks and hits, then I'd pull him.
Thank you, Todd.
It was supposed to be one or the other.
Like, I was...
Yeah, you can't say, well, if he does this, then I'd pull him.
I should have got to the point that, yeah, I would start him the sixth inning, but I elaborated and said when I would take him out during the sixth inning.
I had a good dig at him. Yeah. I said if he walks to base loaded and lets up a grand slam, then I'd give him another batter or two and see where he is.
Yeah, it's a wise
but
guy.
Should
wise
they have
guy.
Pulled him after five? Like, last night, I think we were pretty torn, even to give him that sixth inning.
I just knew what I had. I was fine with that, and I think Kershaw would have been fine with that. Dave Roberts would have been fine with that. But if you're Kershaw and your manager sends you out for the sixth inning, that kind of emboldens you a little bit. Like, okay, you know, Skip still got confidence in me there. And plus, you know, you score a couple of runs and you're more aggressive. You're not worried, boy, if I give up one big hit, we could lose this game. He was able to go at Tampa. Tampa's not good at getting on base. They're not an on-base team, on-base percentage. And, you know, if Kershaw can make sure that you don't walk guys. That way, if they do hit a home run, it's a solo home run. Yes, Todd?
They're the first team to get all the way to the World Series and not be good at getting base runners, the Tampa Bay Rays. That was me being cute just now. The Rays don't really score. They don't play baseball well. But they're four games away from being world champions. That's not really why I raised my hand. I raised my hand wondering if you were worried when Kershaw gave up the home run and he zoomed down on him and he looked up at the sky like, God, please.
Well, of course I am. Yes, I would have been worried.
Your first comment was way better, Todd.
Yeah, I would have stayed with that.
The Rays don't get on base. They just can't score.
Yeah, when you go back to being serious and asking a question, that's not any good.
How about those Doritos Locos Tacos last night?
Todd comes in.
First thing, right to it.
The first thing he says. So he comes in and we're just sitting around. We're getting ready for our morning meeting. He goes, man. Joe Buck, boy, I got tired of him talking about those tacos. And I go, so that's what you took away from the game last night?
And I love Joe Buck. I'm just wondering if there's someone constantly in his ear saying, I know we got to pay the bills, but he's the Hall of Famer, John Smoltz, just like he goes, he's the Hall of Famer, Troy Aikman. I'm Joe Buck. Someone's getting tacos tonight. And if they get a double steal here with Mookie, I'm wondering if it's, I don't want to get legally in trouble. I think it's twice as many tacos for everybody on October 28th.
Yes, Paul.
So Joe Buck was in a position where there was a steal, I think, in inning three. And once that steal happens, he's got to announce that Taco Bell is giving away a Doritos Locos at all their sites on October 22nd.
Yeah.
But then they called it a wild pitch and removed the steal, so he had to retract his taco offer. And, you know, everyone was upset. Smoltz was upset. The Merrick was upset. And then there's a steal.
Oh, I know. And then Todd was upset. Like, this somehow really bothered
Muncy fouls it off, and Mookie's got to go back to second base. No taco yet.
It's ironic because Todd loves fast food, but yeah. Does not go to Taco Bell.
I don't. I go everywhere else you could possibly imagine, but I really don't do the Taco Bell, Del Taco, anything taco.
What other poll questions are we considering today?
Paulie put out there, was it the right time now for the Dolphins to bench Ryan Fitzpatrick for Tua? Was it the right decision, yes or no?
Okay. You can't wait for the results. We can't wait like 5 weeks and go, yep, I told you it was the right move. Or I told you they should have stayed with Fitzmagic. I understand why they made the move. I just want to know if he's healthy. If you say he's healthy, then this is the right move. And I'm assuming he is 100% healthy, because I thought week 11 was when they were going to put him in the starting lineup. That was their bye week. I think the Dolphins internally probably thought the same thing. Let's let Fitzpatrick get us through the bulk of the season. Week 11, we put Tua in. Maybe we're, you know, in line for a playoff spot. Maybe we're not. But I want to make sure he's healthy. And I think the Dolphins putting him in against the Jets last week opened my eyes to, okay, he is ready to play. And, you know, Fitzpatrick can, we've seen him have some pretty incredible games, but he is right now a placeholder, and he knows that. And I think that, and nobody was more excited, you know, when Tua came in than Fitzpatrick, even when he had his first completion. So he knows it. And it's similar to Kurt Warner when he was with the Jets with Eli. They were, I think, a 5-4 team, and Eli got inserted into the starting lineup, and then that was it. Kurt Warner's starting days were done, and then he ended up landing with Arizona to finish up with a Hall of Fame career. But, you know, Fitzpatrick knows what his job is. I'd keep him there. I wouldn't trade him. People say, well, what could you get for Fitzpatrick? I don't know. Like, Dallas is going to trade for Fitzpatrick? I don't think so. But I don't know. I didn't know there was a market for him. The teams that are good are fine with their quarterbacks. The teams that are bad want to continue to be bad, I think. I don't know if Fitzpatrick coming in is going to change anything, but I want him there to mentor Tua. Yeah, McLovin.
I think a team that has a young, injury-prone quarterback would want a Fitzpatrick, like the Dolphins. Like, they would want him more than anyone, right? Because how confident are you in Tua's hip? I know you were kind of following that closely over the offseason.
I don't know anything. I just know it's been 11 months. I just don't know. I'm hoping that he's ready to go. I assume he's ready to go. There's no need to force him into the lineup. But I also think, what if Fitzpatrick had won two or three more games in a row? Can I bring Tua in then? I mean, they won back-to-back games. They had blowouts. And, you know, they nearly beat Seattle in Seattle with Fitzpatrick. They have a young nucleus. They have talent there. And this is the final piece there for them. You're going to bring Tua in, and now you get ready to go, because now you build a Super Bowl lineup. That now you go after a Super Bowl with your roster. But, you know, I just don't know how healthy he is. I'm assuming everything is great. Hope it is. Look forward to seeing him play. And looking at the schedule here, they do have the Rams coming up. Now, he does have the bye week, and that changed everything, because they had to change the bye week for them, and now it's this week. So he's got 13 days to prepare for the Rams. And then he's got the Jets in there. He's got the Bengals in there. I mean, he's got a couple of games that aren't, you know, boy, this is going to be intimidating. And there's no fans. So, I mean, yeah, sure. Why not? Throw him in there. Let's see what he can do. And I would let him ride this out, too, because he's going to struggle a little bit. But, you know, leave him in there as long as he's healthy, and he'll have his growing pains there. But that's a big move, especially after a couple of wins. If you would have said, this quarterback just got benched and he's healthy and they're coming off a couple of wins, I wouldn't have thought Fitzpatrick. But, you know, I should have opened my eyes a little bit more when I saw Tua come into that game against the Jets. And he was throwing a couple passes. In a game that was a blowout, they let him throw a couple of passes, which told me a little bit more about they want to see. And now I guess they've seen enough and they're going to put him in the lineup. Yeah, McLovin.
Would you have been shocked if the news yesterday was Carson Wentz was benched for Jalen Hurts?
A little bit, but I just don't know if I want to throw Jalen Hurts into a situation where the offensive line is not very good and I'm putting a rookie in there. I mean, Carson Wentz is still a good quarterback. I know people are like, oh, I'd get rid of Carson Wentz. I'd put Jalen Hurts in there. Jalen Hurts is a rookie. People didn't even know if Jalen Hurts would get drafted. When he got benched for Tua in Alabama and then he surfaced at Oklahoma, I remember talking to a scout who said, he's not going to get drafted first day, that's for sure. Probably not second day. Then all of a sudden, it's Jalen Hurts might be a first-round quarterback. He goes in the second round, and we go, oh, the Eagles got a steal. I don't know how good Jalen Hurts is. I know how good Carson Wentz can be, but that offensive line is terrible due to all the injuries there. I don't want a rookie in there, even if he's faster than Carson Wentz. Yes, McLovin.
Well, you know this. Philadelphia Eagles fans hate no one more than their starting quarterback, no matter who it is. It could be McNabb, Jaworski, Randall. They've hated every single one of them.
Yeah, Paulie.
Maybe you bench Carson Wentz to make him likable again. You know, if he's on the bench for a few weeks, you lose a few games, then they'll be calling for Carson Wentz and they'll miss him.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. Bruce Arians joining us, Tampa Bay head coach. You know what? My staff didn't realize how great a running quarterback you were in college. Do your players know? I think you had 11 touchdowns one year, didn't you?
Yeah, the record held for a long time, and then Gerard Evans beat it. But he played 15 games. I only played 11. So there's an asterisk on it.
How was your arm?
I was very average. When we were a passing team, I was a running cornerback. When we were a running team, I was a passing quarterback.
Does it help you look at the offense differently having played the position?
Oh, totally. Yeah, the having played in so many different offenses in college, you know, had the pleasure of playing for Dan Henning when Don Strock led the nation in passing as his backup, and then running the wishbone. So saw two totally different sides of the game when I was playing.
Who was your favorite quarterback growing up?
Johnny Unitas. Yeah, the Baltimore Colts were my team.
Did you ever meet him?
I did. They came and played a basketball game against a radio station, and we were like the preliminary game. And we dressed in the same locker room, so I put his trench coat on. They left. I put his trench coat on and his hat. At that time, he had a commercial for a deodorant soap. I was walking around the locker room with his coat on.
What struck me when I met him was that he wasn't tall. Because, you know, growing up, when you saw, like when I met Jack Nicklaus, I thought the Golden Bear is like 6'2", 6'3". Johnny Unitas was like 5'11", it felt like, maybe 6 feet.
Really wasn't those guys, Lenny Moore, Mike Curtis, I mean, everybody in the Baltimore Colts, those were my heroes.
When you went down 10-0 to Aaron Rodgers, what were you thinking on the sidelines?
Exhale. You know, just where we were holding our breath. We came out a little bit tight on both sides of the ball. And, you know, I think Todd Bowles did a great job with the defense on the side. You know, we're letting him out of the pocket, got everything covered. Let's just exhale and go play faster.
And that defense, it felt like they were kind of conservative, or you weren't pushing Rodgers or being aggressive like that. At least it felt like that in the beginning. Then all of a sudden it was like, Ollie, income free. Let's go get him. Let's force him to make some magic here. Was that the game plan?
No, we actually went after early. We just let him out of the pocket. He scrambled on the first 3rd and 10. We dumped somebody, kept rushing the quarterback, let the back out. And it's just a matter of doing your job. But again, the game plan was to stop the run, shut the run down, and then go get him.
And, you know, you start to watch this team now. I don't know how many games it usually takes you each season before you go, okay, now I know who my team is. Do you know who your team is now?
I think we've known defensively. Offensively, we're stressed, still scratching the surface. We've missed so much time in the offseason. So each week's a new week for us offensively. And with all the injuries on offense, getting guys back now, I think we can start finding ourselves.
And, you know, just trying to figure this out, you got it. Obviously, you know, Tom knew there and you didn't get the offseason workouts. You got injuries with your wide receiver. Like, how dynamic can this offense be, or do you want it to be?
Oh, I think it could be one of the tops. You know, we're running the ball well right now. Offensive line's healthy, knock on woods, and blocking well. So with Ronald Jones running and getting Leonard Fournette back, just makes the game easy for Tom. And then now the receivers are all getting healthy. And yeah, he didn't even practice with those guys for 3 weeks. And so it should just get better and better.
Did you guys make a run at Le'Veon Bell?
No.
You're fine with the running backs that you have?
Oh, yeah. We got more than enough.
By the way, 7 questions before I brought up Tom Brady's name. That might be a record, Coach.
There you go.
Yeah. How's Gronk doing? because it felt like he was kind of laboring there starting this season. But, you know, he did have a touchdown catch. So how would you assess where he is right now?
I think he's playing really, really good. You know, his number, when teams want to double cover Mike Evans, it kind of opens up the field for Gronk. And he was working through it early in the season. He's in great shape. And I think we're doing a better job of coaching him up a little bit, and Tom too, as far as when we're seeing different coverages, where we want to go with the ball.
Is Gronk goofy?
He's unusual. He's a hell of a lot of fun, though, man. He is a hell of a lot of fun.
Give me an example.
Just talking to him. Like, dude, did your elevator go all the way to the top? I mean, I'm not sure, but it is fun.
Can you imagine Belichick, though, and him? You know how Belichick is. Like, you got a sense of humor, and, you know, you're pretty back and forth with players, but I can't imagine Belichick, you know, just laughing at Gronk or allowing Gronk to be Gronk.
I just don't think you can help it. And I think Bill probably had a lot of smiles on his face when he was coaching him too.
What is it about Brady that has surprised you so far?
His interaction with young players, I think, is outstanding. He's like another coach. And you know, you can, as a coach, you can tell a guy, keep pumping his arms, keep doing this, come out of your breaks. But when he says it, they listen for some reason. And it's just amazing seeing him work with these young guys because of the injuries to Chris and Mike and having to put young guys in there who never played and him just coaching them up, trusting them. I you know, everybody gets on him about getting on people. I love when he gets on people. Hell, I don't have to do it then.
But, you know, everything you do this year because Tom's in town is scrutinized. Like, I don't know if you've ever felt this way before where the national media is going, oh, did you hear what Arian said about Brady? Like, these are headlines here. Like, have you felt this way before at any time in your coaching career where everybody was watching what you were doing and scrutinizing it?
Not really. It's this is different. We knew what we were getting into, and just embrace it and have fun with it.
Yeah. But, you know, Bill Parcells used to yell at Phil Sims when Lawrence Taylor would make a mistake. Like, can you yell at Tom so everybody knows that I'm yelling at Tom and you know, nobody's untouchable here?
That's happened in practice, but it's more Blaine Gabbert gets to ask Chewin all the time.
So you don't yell at Tom, you yell at Gabbert.
Oh, yeah, and he relays the message. But Tom hears me, so.
Poor
Gabbert. It was always that way with Ben. Byron Leftwich and Charlie Best got cussed out all the time.
Instead of Roethlisberger?
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, you're dealing with egos, though, when you're dealing with the quarterback. Like, is it more fragile dealing with a quarterback than any other position?
Oh, totally. Totally. Their mindset, the vibe that they're in, you know, you don't want to change it. But you want to get your point across too. The ball should be here, and it's fun though. It's been a great time coaching him.
But I would think with wide receivers, because they're always open and they're always complaining, that they would be hard to deal with too.
I've had some in the past. This group is as selfless as I've ever been around. You know, Mike Evans, as long as we win, lose, draw. If he catches one or he catches 10, he's the same guy. Chris Godwin's the same way. So we're very, very fortunate in that regard.
Who was the diva that you had?
Let's just say there were a few.
How many Kango hats do you own?
Oh, gosh, about 30 or 40. But they're all New Era.
Oh, okay. Do you have the creamsicle?
No, I couldn't get it made. I'm still working on that one.
Oh, that'd be good, though. You bring. When are you guys going creamsicle?
I think it's going to be a while. Hopefully next year when the uniform rules loosen up a little bit, we can have a different helmet.
Oh, so you can't do it this year?
No, because of the helmet issue. You can only have one helmet.
Oh, man. Tell Tom to do it. They won't find him.
For sure.
Yeah, the commissioner, of course, he won't find Tom. Coach, congratulations, and good luck. You got Sunday night against the Raiders, and that should be fun at the Raiders. Thanks for joining us.
You bet, Pat. Anytime.
All right. That's Bruce Arians, Buccaneers head coach. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. Bring in Jane Slater, NFL Network reporter. And you can see Jane on NFL Now today at 1 Eastern. Thursday Night Football continues this week with the Giants and Eagles on Fox, NFL Network, and Amazon Prime Video. Jane, thanks for joining us. First of all, explain to the audience what you first reported about the Cowboys and Mike McCarthy.
Well, look, I think if you pop in the tape and you look at the effort and the confusion and guys playing out of alignment, particularly on defense, you start scratching your head and saying, where has been the drop-off? Because for the most part, we're seeing very similar personnel from last year. Now, look, I want to cushion that by saying they had two of their starting corners on IR. They lost Gerald McCoy early in the season. DeMarcus Lawrence has seemingly disappeared from this defensive line. You had your two Mike linebackers, Sean Lee and Leighton Vandrush, dealing with injuries. So I'll have those allowances, but it seemed like there was frustration, particularly from Jalen Smith early in the season when he's calling out this defense and saying perhaps they could simplify the playbook. And Dan, I know you've been doing this a lot longer than I have, but when you typically see a new coaching staff come in, it's a little shocking that early to hear a player question the direction or the playbook of a new staff. It just felt disrespectful to me. So I've been digging in a little bit, and as Mike alluded, you know, we started the season with, you know, they want to handle things internally. And for the most part, players haven't been getting back to reporters. We haven't really been able to get a sense of are they buying into things. But if you just look at the tape, clearly they're not. I mean, Everson Griffin a couple of weeks ago even said he had abandoned his three-point stance. So this is guys, it seems like, giving up. And Mike McCarthy had even insinuated, well, it feels like guys are improvising a little bit. They need to just buy into this defense. So he sort of told you what I was beginning to find out. But I think what was concerning was the spirit of it. In other words, this coaching staff doesn't know how to teach. They can't adjust on the fly. They're just not good. And when you hear those sort of things, that's concerning that you're six games in. I get the frustration. You've got 10 guys on IR. Then yesterday, Mike McCarthy tells us the backup left tackle to Tyron Smith had to go have minor surgery. Now I'm told that's going to be about 1 to 2 weeks. So that one hopefully won't be as severe. But you are down to the bottom of the barrel as it relates to this offensive line. And again, 10 guys ahead of that have been on IR starters. So there have been a lot of unique challenges for the staff. But I think when you start losing the buy-in and there's a give up, you can't overcome that. You can lose guys to injuries, but to lose this many guys this early in the season to the process, something that we knocked Jason Garrett for, and Jason never got too high, never got too low, he never got reactive, and he certainly didn't. This was another thing that stood out to me, Dan. It was a lengthy interview with them, and I appreciate Mike McCarthy answering the questions. He certainly gives his full answer, something that we didn't get necessarily from the old regime, but when he admitted to me that he simplified the playbook after the second week, when he was telling us we're not going to be a one-call defense, we believe in this personnel, I just found myself going, well, what is it? Are you guys staying the course? Are you being reactive? This is a team that's used to a coaching staff that didn't get too high or didn't get too low. It's just we're going to play our game. But then it sounds like you are being reactive. So I was a little confused by that yesterday.
How many sources did you have? They were anonymous. Can you tell me how many?
I want to be careful, Dan, because as you know, and I don't want to specify what sides of the ball or where this frustration lies, I would say that it's permeated throughout the locker room. We'll leave it there. But I know that with a new coaching regime, it could lead to guys not being here next year, punished. We saw it in the past. Guys like Alan Hearns have gone on the record and you know, been frustrated about not getting the ball as it related to the receiving core, and then the ball didn't come to him. So I want to be very careful. I think it's also important to distinguish there are some egos on this team. Previous coaching staffs have talked about there would be a standard of coaching that would be set by Jason Garrett. Some coaches would try to implement that. And then some of these players would, in some cases, go over the head. And it was, you know, go to the principal's office and they would sort of back the player. And that can be frustrating. So there are, I think there's a couple of unique challenges that Mike McCarthy is dealing with. One, the condensed training camp. B, you're bringing in all these new coaches. You don't have the personnel you signed up for. And line item number one, you're starting quarterback. And I think it's hard to develop relationships with these guys as men virtually. And then when you don't really have time to sort of coddle these guys in your office that you typically would at a training camp or be able to take these guys to dinner, when you've just got to focus on the season. So I also want to position this as saying maybe Mike doesn't have enough of his guys still in that locker room, and that could change. So I think it's very important to be careful about what I say here and how we could connect the dots.
Jerry Jones is loyal to a fault. How loyal will he be with Mike McCarthy?
I think the leash is long with Mike. I don't think the leash is long for Mike Nolan. If you talk to a lot of people in this league who've worked with Mike, the feedback is great guy, shouldn't be a defensive coordinator. A couple people said they can't understand why the Cowboys didn't see that. Now, if you know Mike McCarthy and Mike Nolan's history, it makes sense. They worked together, obviously, in San Francisco. But if you go back and you look at that 2005 team, we're trending very much in the same direction here. So while you had Jerry say, I'm okay with Mike yesterday, and you've got Mike giving him the vote of confidence and saying that this is the defense they want, this is the direction they want to go, you could see some changes there. I've also heard that Dak Prescott has done a really good job of masking perhaps some of the deficiencies of Kellen Moore in his young career as an offensive coordinator. Does Mike start taking over the playbook at some point? It certainly gives him an out. In other words, after this season, you could say, well, you guys wanted Kellen Moore here. We let him call the plays. It didn't work. I'm going to take some more control after this season. So I think you've got to give Mike a chance. At least what he's saying to us is he's saying he's got an open door policy. I did NFL Network yesterday, and James Jones, of course, played under Mike. That was James's feedback, that this is a coach that you can talk to. Maybe, again, because of the condensed season and not getting that opportunity to really gel with this new staff, players just haven't felt like they could. And given the timetable and the speed of this season, you haven't been able to fill that out.
Also, you look at the NFC East, and you can win the NFC East. You can go to the playoffs and still have a bad year and still make it to the playoffs. But you also look at everybody else, and you can play subpar and get into the postseason. So it's really hard to assess how the Cowboys are. Hey, we made it to the playoffs. Yeah, but you were 7-9. Or we didn't make it to the playoffs, and you know the Eagles ended up. We had all these injuries. Like I don't know how you're going to give a grade to Mike McCarthy at the end of this first year. And I think that'll be a real challenge for Jerry, because this defense, I think, is going to get better. We can't get worse, right? But I think it gets better. I just don't know if the offense gets better. Because Zeke Elliott, I hated that second contract that he got. Amari Cooper, I don't want him for $10 million, let alone $100 million. And offensive line is a disaster. I got Andy Dalton as my quarterback. Like, I don't know how you give out grades when this is all said and done.
I think it's tough given the injuries. And look, injuries are never an excuse. It's the next man up. But there's not a lot of next men up when we start looking at depth. You know, I talked about the season. It was sort of an embarrassment of riches when we looked at they got CeeDee Lamb in the draft. And, you know, they were able to, get Andy Dalton because of COVID and what a backup he was. This is a bona fide starter in the league who's taken his team to the playoffs. And then you look at the defensive line, you said, look at Gerald McCoy, and you've got Everson Griffin and Aldon Smith. The reports are coming back strong on him. And now you look at this team, and it's just an embarrassment. And I think everybody is just fairly shell-shocked, and I think you're seeing fatigue and frustration. What I didn't see under the Jason Garrett regime was the lack of buy-in that I'm hearing. And I think that's what is probably the most concerning, not only to Jerry Jones and Steven at this point and the players, but probably to Mike. And Mike even conceded that yesterday. He's had a lot of sleepless nights because they're not improving in any areas right now. And so I appreciate him taking ownership. I appreciate him saying you've got to be careful about calling out professional football players. I appreciate him saying you've got to handle this as men. And so to the outside, it does seem like the sky is falling. I think the Cowboys just need to get past this year. And I think given some time to gel, I think Mike is the type of guy you want there. I always say this is a unique position. I went to the University of Texas, Dan, and you know we're looking at what's going on with Tom Herman down there. You have to be not only a coach, but a diplomat and a politician and an amazing marketer for that position. It expects so much more than what he is expecting in Green Bay. In fact, I kind of chuckle when I think about the conversation that I had, Mike, in the offseason. It had to do with, without giving away too much, it had to do with something that he did not consider was a big story, and it certainly was. And I said to him, if the backup quarterback stubs his toe, that's a story in Dallas.
Yeah.
And so I think he's learning that, and I think his staff is learning that things are just magnified with the star on the helmet.
Is Matthew McConaughey a professor at your alma mater?
He's the Minister of Culture, Dan. The MOC on campus.
He's the big MOC on campus.
Exactly.
What is Minister of Culture?
You know, I think he's the, you know, the hype man. He makes Texas cool. He's a professor. I'd love to have continuing education and get in one of those classes. I used to work for Longhorn Network and got to do a couple of interviews with him on the sidelines. And, you know, he would come up here and do stuff with the Rangers. And he's a lovely guy. I mean, the guy is as charismatic off camera as he is on camera. But Texas has certainly needed him in recent years to give them something to be excited about.
We interviewed him, I think, the Fiesta Bowl. And he was on the sidelines. And like, he's so approachable. But he's so into the game. Like, don't bother me during the game. And I remember talking to him, and you just feel like a movie's going to break out. When you're around him, it feels like it's like he's in character. Rah, rah, rah. And then he'll just talk to you a little bit. And you go, oh, how's that sports center? You're like, and I'd be like, yeah. I'd be like, hey, who is Goldie Hawn's daughter is going to come out here? What's her name? Kate Hudson. She's going to come out and embrace him, and we're in a movie scene here or something. But
you do expect him to break character at some point, and he doesn't. I was actually in college in 99 during the Bongo incident. So, of course, he was just a local celebrity as a result. I mean, Dazed and Confused was obviously, before he was even the rom-com guy. Dazed and Confused is just so iconic because there's the Moon Tower and there's so many spots in Austin that was filmed in. But just feeling like he kind of felt like Austin, he was uniquely one of ours, is how you felt about Matthew McConaughey. And I think a lot of us appreciate that he didn't go all Hollywood on us and he returned to his Texas roots.
Well, also, when I bring up the he played bongos, he was naked playing bongos, and I think the police were called to his house and he was making too much racket. Like, he thought, this is my house. Like, what's the big deal? I'm naked playing bongos here. Like, you guys got the problem, not me. I'm not driving.
There's an argument to be had there, Dan, to be fair.
You know, the more that he talked to me about it, Jane, I'm like, yeah, you're right. You're naked playing bongos. And yeah, you know, police never should have come over there. Neighbors never should have complained. Good luck today with the fallout from this. Certainly stirred things up a little bit, and that burner, front burner, got turned up a little bit. But thanks for joining us, as always, and great work there.
Always a pleasure, Dan. Thanks for having me on.
That's Jane Slater, NFL Network reporter. You can see her on NFL Now today at 1 Eastern. Thursday Night Football continues this week with the Giants and the Eagles on Fox NFL Network, Amazon Prime. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR, or stream us live on the Peacock app. Jessica Mendoza, the ESPN baseball analyst, part of the broadcast team for the World Series on ESPN Radio, and they'll be on the call tonight at 7:30 Eastern. And last night, she made history, becoming the first female to serve as an analyst for a World Series game on any platform nationally. She's alongside Dan Schulman and Chris Singleton. Jessica, good morning. If I told you 20 years ago you would be doing this in the World Series, you would have said what?
That's a great question. I mean, I wouldn't have believed it just because, I mean, I was just trying to make it as a softball player. Like, I wouldn't have believed I would have gone to the Olympics. Like, honestly, I think I was just trying to figure out life at that point. But I think more importantly, Dan, like, you just weren't hearing women, right? You know, I watched a ton of sports like we all did growing up, and women's voices, let alone women's sports, but hearing women on male events, it didn't happen. I definitely never heard it. As much as I loved listening to all the guys that I grew up listening to, it just wasn't even on your radar.
And when you hear that voice, and you don't know what impact you've had on somebody, but maybe 15 years from now, you're going to find out when somebody walks up to you and says, I listen to you on radio. And because of that, I decided to do this. Like, you're going to have, you're going to mean something to a lot of people, but you're going to mean something to some girls, some women who are listening to this, and you may never know. So it may not be impactful as much to people now, but it's going to be impactful, I think, down the road. So congratulations on that. And I hope you savor the moment.
I think one of the biggest things that I've learned is, yes, the impact on young girls, but really, like, what I've heard back from just even doing television is dads. Like, a lot of fathers that are out there that, you know, they've watched sports and they've got daughters, but they never really made that transition in their mind of, like, can my daughter do this? And I've heard from more fathers that were like, when I first heard you, I didn't like it. Like, I was like, what is this?
Well, guys don't want to be told about sports by a woman.
Totally. Like, and were honest with me. But then they're like, all of a sudden, my little six-year-old plopped down on the couch next to me and was like, is that a girl, Daddy? Is that a girl? And just active change of like, oh, wait, like, this can impact the people that I love and care about. And that, to me, like, yes, the girls, the women, of course, that's the obvious. But there's a lot of men out there that I feel like that's just as important, too.
That's great. But do you feel like you have to prove yourself every game?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, and it's not even like proving it for me. Like, I feel like my prep, like, you know, I know that I've got this, but there is definitely, and I felt it yesterday, to be honest with you, is like, I started to feel those nerves of like, don't screw up. Like, you have zero room for error, because this door has been open and we're coming through, but like, we don't want that door to ever close again. And there's a responsibility there. Like, if I mess up, like, that door could get shut and be like, okay, we're not going to have women doing World Series games anymore.
How would a great hitter, let's say Mookie Betts is at the plate against the best softball pitcher, how would Mookie do?
I think Mookie would take a lot of pitches, foul off a bunch, and find, like, scrappy way. He's not getting a home run. And in fact, he's not going to slug against the softball pitcher.
No.
But, like, he'll grind. And I feel like he'd get like a key walk. Like, he'd lay off the rise ball after trying to swing at it and then kind of looking like, okay, I have no chance on hitting that. So I'm going to take that pitch. And he'd learn within the at bat. You'd literally see him change within an at bat to figure out a way to get on base, knowing like, I'm not going to crush any of these pitches.
I'm glad that America is seeing Mookie Betts. Like, even when he was with Boston, you would think that, you know, the rest of the baseball world would notice this, or the casual fan, but he still is. We talk about Mike Trout as a five-tool player. Like, Mookie Betts, to me, like, he would back up first base on a throw from the pitch. Like, just small little things that we notice playing the game. And I just love that we're focusing on defense. He had the audacity to steal a base, two bases last night, Jessica. Doesn't he know about the analytics? You're not supposed to steal bases. Like, what's wrong with Mookie Betts?
He was, like, the first player since Babe Ruth. I mean, that tells you where the game has been. No, you don't even see a stolen base, let alone two. And by the way, he pretty much stole home. Like, the high home view of him getting that jump on the weak ground ball, like, he was gone. It was like a squeeze play.
Yeah.
He was all in. He read the swing before there was even contact made.
What did we learn about the Dodgers last night?
I mean, we saw, I think Clayton Kershaw leads that with, like, him not coming back in the seventh. I think we saw an evolution of Dave Roberts. And seeing that Clayton Kershaw had his stuff, he had a great start. It's game one. I think last 5 years, Clayton Kershaw runs out there in the seventh, maybe the eighth, and at some point he gets hit. And we're talking 3-4 runs. The Rays are in this game. Clayton Kershaw's narrative continues. Instead, you saw the frustration of the dugout. He wanted, I mean, 78 pitches. Mm. Like, yeah, he could have gone back out there. But the understanding of, like, we've got a rested bullpen. We've got guys behind him. When he struggles in the postseason, it's when he's left in too long. So I think, to me, that's first and foremost what you learn the most about the Dodgers is they are learning and evolving from the mistakes they've made in the past.
So what do you expect to happen tonight in this chess match between these two?
Well, I mean, the Dodgers have to go to a bullpen game. And this is the difference of the ALCS ending a day earlier is that they were able to line up their guys. Now, Blake Snell, 2018 Cy Young Award winner. Like, he's got the stuff. But oh, Dan, like, oh my gosh, like watching him struggle through like 100+ pitches his last two starts in like 3 1/3 innings. I mean, buckle up, fans. Like, this is not the best of baseball when you'll watch, especially combined with the Dodgers offense. Like, not because they're explosive, which they are, but they're patient. And Blake Snell doesn't throw a lot of strikes. He gets you to try and chase. And you're going to see ball one, ball two, ball three, maybe some foul pitches. It's going to be a long, and he's going to literally just try to get them to chase. And for the Dodgers on the flip side, I mean, it's a bullpen game, but they're going to have to use a lot of their guys, I think, to mix and match, because that's what the Rays do. I mean, they go left, right, and they're going to try to play that chess match.
And I don't know. It's hard to go in as a favorite. You know, when you play, like, you're supposed to win. The Dodgers are supposed to win. And, you know, people probably criticize them if they win in six games. Like, you guys should win in five or four, whatever it is. And Kershaw goes out to the mound. Like, he's always expected to win. I don't know what that feels like, because I was never a favorite. But can you sense it with the Dodgers that they're prohibitive favors? They're supposed to win. They spend all this money. Tampa Bay, they spend, like, you know, 58 cents on their roster. I don't know how hard it is to play and then play with that pressure on top of you.
Yeah, I sensed it the most in that Braves series in the NLCS, them losing those first two games. They weren't enjoying themselves. And I mean, Dan, like, I played Team ESA, like, the only thing to win was gold. Like, literally a silver medal was a failure. Like, I know pressure, I understand it, and I recognize it. And the Dodgers have had it for years now. But let's, like, be real. It's as high as it's ever been this year, because it's not the Yankees on the other side. It's not this big, huge powerhouse, what everyone talked about coming into the season. And Tampa Bay, I mean, let's give them credit. They have the best record in the American League. But the Dodgers, all eyes are on them. If they do not win this World Series, they are a failed team. Tampa Bay, yes, they want to win it all. But the fact that they've gotten here and what they've been able to do to get here, beating the Yankees, beating the Astros, the most hated team in baseball, like, they've already won. The Dodgers have to win it all.
If you're Clayton Kershaw and you could choose that the Dodgers sweep the Rays and you don't pitch again in the series, or you start game five and you're leading 3-1. Which one would Clayton Kershaw take?
Oh, game five. Oh, I mean, this is part of his, not demise, I don't want to say that, but like, knowing you could have a championship. I mean, he would want that championship. He is a team player, but like, he also wants the ball. I mean, in game seven on Sunday, he was in the bullpen. He was like, put me in. I mean, he still has that, like, give me the ball. I want to help. The difference is, Dan, this year, it's not about him, like, which is a great thing. It's not all Clayton Kershaw on his shoulders. If he doesn't win his games, they don't win. Like, there is the Mookie Betts, the Walker Buehlers. I mean, there's so much talent now more than ever that it really isn't about him, and he doesn't have to take the ball or get the ball.
I brought this up prior to the start of the show, and my guys, the Danettes, looked at me like I was crazy. Do you think one day we'll see a team adopt, like, Whitey Herzog's Cardinals approach, where we're going to run, we're going to get on base, we're going to have great defense, we're going to run down everything in the outfield, we're going to take the extra base. Like, instead of what it is now, is somebody going to be, are they going to counter-program baseball like teams are trying to counter-program the Golden State Warriors?
I don't see it. I would love to see it. I mean, you have to have that in your team, I think, to win a championship. You have to have the ability to play defense, to get on base, just put the ball in play. I mean, Will Smith had a hit, you know, I think it was game seven, where he literally just jammed himself and went the opposite way to beat the shift. Like, such, like, old school.
Nobody awesome. Does that. No, they won't even take a bunt. They won't. I don't understand it. I don't understand. I'm too old, Jessica.
No, and Dan, I'm with you. I just, the games that are won are won by the long ball. The numbers show it. And so more teams are going to go after guys. And I know this is like cringing, like, and I get it. The strikeouts are at an all-time high. But teams win based on the amount of home runs they hit. If you out-homer the other team, you win the game. That's like basically what it is. So you don't see guys stealing bases. You don't see like the emphasis on just pure defense. And I'm with you. I mean, I love long balls. Of course, you want that, but you have to have a combination. So I would like to see, I think the perfect team has the understanding that you need both. But you see more GMs go after guys that strike out, can't really move, but they can hit home runs.
But do you think the pitching approach will change, that everybody throws 100 now? So it's a novelty if you don't throw 100. Can you see where you're going to have guys who work the corners, who, you know, off speed stuff instead of my power versus your power?
I think you'll see those guys, but they'll be out of the bullpen more as specialists. I mean, to see them in a starter, it is more rare, like the Dallas Keuchels that, yeah, you know, just break an 80, like bottom of the zone, hit your corners. Kenta Maeda had a really good year for the Minnesota Twins. He was a Dodger, but look at when he was with the Dodgers. He was out of the bullpen. I mean, they didn't even use him as a starter. He's the ace for the Minnesota Twins because they understand the value in that. But I think what we see now is the guys that either because they drop down or they're able to just hit their spots, locate, they're not striking guys out, but they're getting that weak contact. Those are guys that just honestly, they analytics don't show they can go two times through the lineup. So you'll only see them in the seventh inning.
Have fun tonight, and congrats. Please tell Dan Shulman I said hello. One of the great people, not only great broadcasters, but please tell Dan I said hello.
It's been awesome to do these games with him and reunite. Dan, thank you so much.
Thank you, Jessica. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR, or stream us live on the Peacock app. I saw some tweets yesterday with Adam Beasley. He covers the Dolphins for the Miami Herald. And by the way, talk about showing up for work and something falls right in your lap. That's a great day, Adam. He joins us now on loan from the Miami Herald. Did you see this coming, that Tua was going to take over for Ryan Fitzpatrick?
No, I was, Dan, trying to ease into my bye weekend. I'm going to the Keys this weekend. I was already planning my weekend, and kaboom, and here I am talking to you 24 hours later.
All right, so give me the logic behind this.
Well, it was time. Tua Tagovailoa probably would have started week one, if not earlier, if they had an offseason, which they didn't because of COVID. So the Dolphins know he's the future, and they want the future to start now. And look, he's not right now today better than Ryan Fitzpatrick. Fitz actually has played pretty well this season. They've won 3 out of 4. But I think this move's more about 2021 than it is 2020. Can this team make the playoffs with Ryan Fitzpatrick as their starter? Sure, but they'll probably be one and done. What they're looking to do in Miami is to build a sustained winner, and you got to get your quarterback's reps to do that.
And I just wondered about his health. I didn't think of it at the time, and I probably should have, when I saw him come in at the end of the Jets game. And he threw a couple of passes. And I was wondering, was that on purpose, that you're up 24 to nothing and this is mop-up time, it's 2 minutes to go, and he's throwing a couple of passes?
Dan, not only did he throw passes, his very first pass was a naked bootleg to his left, running into the teeth of the defense. I mean, seriously, the exact spot on the field where his hip exploded 12 months ago, they're asking him to do the same thing. So I think, if nothing else, that was a sign to the world that his hip is good, he's ready. And they're ready to turn the page. But yeah, they got some confidence by him playing last week, but the confidence they've really gotten was from watching him in practice. Brian Flores said 2 weeks ago he wasn't ready. He apparently is ready now. I think the bye helps. And it'll be fascinating because, look, I've been covering this team. This is my 9th season, and this is the first time I've been asked to be on your show. There's a reason. This is a completely, completely irrelevant team for the vast majority of time that I've been covering them. And now everybody's talking about him.
Yeah, I mentioned that a couple hours ago, that you just want to be relevant. And now the Dolphins have a tune-in factor. I don't know how long it lasts. I don't know how good he's going to be. But you're going to go out of your way to watch a game instead of just wait for the highlights there. And there's something to be said for that. I was wondering, though, Adam, if Fitzpatrick had 2 or 3 more wins in a row, would it, like, they didn't, were the Dolphins concerned that if we started really playing well, and I think in one of your tweets, like, the veterans were like, wait, what? We're kind of surprised you're making this move. Were they concerned that they could somehow win a couple more games in a row, and then it would be even harder to bench Ryan Fitzpatrick?
No, I think this is just serendipity, to be honest. I think the fact that their schedule got completely blown up because of COVID, they were supposed to have a week 11 bye, now they have a week 7 bye. It was just the right time. They're going to give him a full 2 weeks to get with the offense, to get his feet under him. So, yeah, I do think if they had a game this coming weekend, which was the original plan, Ryan Fitzpatrick would still be the starter.
Are they going to keep Ryan Fitzpatrick?
They better. I mean, he is the most popular player in that locker room. And I mean, there would be trade value for him. Certainly he can do as good of a job as Andy Dalton did on Monday. He's top seven in QBR. He's top 20, top 15 in passer rating. There's a reason they won five games last year and they're 3-3 this year. It's not because they're loaded with talent, although they are better from a talent standpoint than they were last year. It's because Ryan Fitzpatrick makes them better than what they are. And that's tough to swallow. If you're Kyle Van Noy at age 29, if you're Eric Flowers at age 26, 27, that your window isn't forever and you see a shot to make the playoffs this year and they sandbag the quarterback going into the bye, that might be a tough sell in the locker room.
And you got the Texans draft pick this year as well. So you got two first-round picks this year?
Yeah, that's right. And well, the Texans are 1-5. I think right now they'd have the seventh pick, courtesy of my favorite website, tankathon.com. But no, they will have ammunition next year. And they're going to have all the information they need on Tua going into next offseason. I don't think they're going to pull a Rosen where they'll draft Kyler Murray number one if they have a number one pick and all that. But it's good for them to have as much information as possible. So when they go into next offseason with another bounty of draft picks, they can make an educated decision.
Hey, you got Miami sports is doing well. Marlins make the playoffs. The U is actually competitive. You got the Heat. You got the Dolphins now with Tua. Things are good. No more vacations there, big boy.
Yeah, I kind of wish it was spread out a little bit. Because it feels like just yesterday the Heat were in the NBA Finals, and you mentioned UM and the Marlins and all that. Yeah, give us a buildup a little bit. And I don't know from your perspective, it's just sensory overload at this point. Tua is a huge story, but tomorrow something else will happen.
Great to talk to you, and we'll try to have you on somewhere within the next 8 years, if that's okay.
Yeah, I will hold you to that.
Thank you, Adam. Great stuff. Adam Beasley, he covers the Miami Dolphins for the Miami Herald. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app.